Hour 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order. Okay, we have a full agenda today. Bear with me on order here. We have several folks testifying other committees that will be coming here, and we need, they're from over 50 miles from out of town, and so we're going to work with those folks to get these bills heard. So we're going to start out with House File 179, Representative Weiner, if you'd like to come forward, or at the... Oh, members, you have it in your packets. Are there amendments? There's one amendment.
Yes.
And before we get into that, Representative Joy, would you move the minutes from the meeting of the 11th of February, 2025?
I move.
Any additions or corrections? Representative Joy has moved the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Pass that one myself. Okay, so let's go to House File 179. Representative Weiner, welcome to your committee. Representative Weiner moves House File 179. And I believe, Representative, you have a technical amendment to get the bill in the shape that you need it to be in. The H017981 amendment, is that correct? Is that your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's my amendment.
Representative Weiner moves the H017981 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended. Representative Weiner, two-year bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, Tax Committee. It's great to be here again, actually. Bring this bill forward. If you were in the Tax Committee before, you may be familiar with it. This is the Browerville Construction Sales Tax Exemption. In your packets, there's a handout describing briefly what happened, and with me today is Superintendent of Browerville School, Scott McBroughton, and he'll explain a little bit more, but this bill made it through House and Senate last year and fell through in conference committee. And hopefully we can get them across the finish line this time around. So with that, Mr. McBroughton, if you would explain about the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Weiner. Before we start, are there any folks who would like to testify on behalf of the bill that are in the audience with concerns on the bill? And then we'll come back to the department a little bit later here as we wrap this bill up. Superintendent, please state your name for the record and present your testimony, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Tax Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Representative Weiner, thank you as well. As you can see in the document that you have in front of you, April 1st, 2023, the greatest April Fool's joke in Browerville history was not that April Fool's joke. My track coach called me up at around 11 o'clock that day and told me that my gym had collapsed. And, of course, you know, I'm saying, you know, that's not even funny. And but one of the track kids had picked up a basketball and tried to shoot a jump shot, and he said, "Ooh, there's something wrong with the baskets." And the track coach immediately emptied out my gym because the baskets were hanging at an angle and were at about 7 feet tall. So from that point on, about 22 hours later, we brought that gym down in a controlled collapse. And if you turn that page over, you'll see what that looked like. And it did not look very pretty, because once we compromised that north wall, that east wall blew up. So that's what it absolutely looked like 22 hours later. To make everything short, we are currently building a $21 million gymnasium. Of that $21 million, the insurance paid $5 million. To get to $5 million, that took about 4 months of negotiating with an insurance company. And I was told if I could get to $5 million, shut my mouth and run. And that's what we did. After that point in time, we went to the voters. And if you know anything about the Browerville School District, the Browerville School District is now composed of another former school district, which was the first school district to dissolve in 40 years in the state of Minnesota. And Browerville absorbed that school district. So that school district, along with the original Browerville school district, went to the polls the fall of 2023 and voted on a $16 million bond issue to move forward with rebuilding that gymnasium. Fast forward, we are scheduled to move into that facility on September 1st, and it is still on track to do so. In fact, we actually took control of two of those classrooms on Monday with the help of myself and a couple of custodians, because we put all the furniture together on Monday morning. So it was actually kind of nice that we got two of those classrooms. One of them was the special ed classroom, and one of them was our student lounge. So that was excellent that we got to do that. The community was excited because they are seeing progress. Also right now, theatrical stage is completely, has a roof on it. So that is excellent, and we'll be starting some cement work. About 75% of the walls are up, but we are facing cold weather. Unlike here, where it was only a balmy 1 degree below zero, it was 25 degrees below zero in Browerville this morning. So we're waiting for a little bit of heat so we can lay some more concrete. So if you happen to look at some of the numbers that I think Representative Weiner has passed out to you, it's roughly about $7.5 million in construction costs with the materials, which comes to just over $500,000 in sales tax relief that would relieve the patrons of the Browerville School District. So that is what we are asking you to get over the finish line, and it would be a great opportunity to aid my constituents. And to help sweeten you up, and to help out Representative Weiner, because I think it was Representative Stavinsky accused him last year of shirking his duties of not bringing treats under my bill, but he actually had a bill earlier than that. I did bring treats to alleviate that for you. So I just want you to know that he's not shirking his duties. Okay?
And then you wonder why your bill went down.
So I took it one step higher this year to make sure that I had that covered. So,
good job.
So remember that when you're voting.
Yeah, no.
All in favor.
Are there any questions?
Okay, and I probably made a mistake here because this is a sales tax exemption. I should have had Representative Smith move it.
I did feel slighted, so thank you for.
So, any questions for the superintendent or the author on this bill? We've seen it, well, some of us have seen it before, not everybody. Questions of Representative Weiner? Okay, then what we will do is Representative Weiner renews his motion that House File 179, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Superintendent, for your testimony. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Item next, let's go to, we have some witnesses from out of town on, let's see here, it's a House File XXX. What that means is we've got the folks in town today because they're doing some work in the Senate. We should have a number on that shortly, so this will be an informational hearing only. But then when we have a House File number, it would be hopefully after the testimony today, Representative Harder will do a great job here that we'll just lay that one over at that time for possible inclusion. We're not doing that today because we do not have the actual bill before us, but we've done that before, and hopefully that is that okay with Chair Gomez that we put that way?
Yeah.
Okay, so Representative Harder, welcome to your committee. We're not going to move anything because we don't have the official bill before us, but we're going to work off the language of what the bill will be. And at that point, too, is there an amendment on this one? Oh, no. Informational only. So, Representative Harder, welcome to your committee. If you could please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Davids and members of the Tax Committee. And I appreciate and thank you for taking the time to hear this bill. And I'd like to take a moment just to describe what this bill will do. So in Section 1, Subdivision 1, it exempts a water tower and water treatment facility in Watertown from the state sales tax for materials and supplies for construction, reconstruction, upgrades, and renovations. And then the Section 1 Subdivision 2 appropriates the resources to the Department of Revenue for a refund. So with me today, Chair Davids and committee, I have with me the mayor, Mayor Walters, and the city administrator, Dan Tolsma. So the city of Watertown is a small community of around 4,700 people facing a significant construction cost for a large public project. And so the mayor will give more information on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Watertown, zip code 55388.
Correct.
I have no idea why that's in my head. I really don't. I can't explain it. Okay, so please state your name and who you represent for the record, Your Honor, and please provide your testimony.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair and honorable House members. I'm Michael Walters, Mayor of the City of Watertown. I'd like to thank all of you for your time, and I'd like to thank Representative Harder for support and advocacy of our community. As a small community with a large basic public infrastructure needs, we have come to you today to ask for your help by allowing a state sales tax exemption for our two large public infrastructure projects. As you know, having one level of government pay taxes to another level of government for a public facility makes the project more burdensome for our taxpayers. I respect that exempting our projects from paying this tax means you need to find money on the state side. I'm hopeful that you can find our water infrastructure facilities worthy of this important and needed exemption. Watertown needs these facilities to meet the tightening state regulations and to accommodate for future growth. It's also important to add that our fire department covers all of the nearby townships and also assists in the nearby cities in fire disasters, and this directly relates to that. I'm happy to take any questions, and I have my Watertown staff with me who can answer any detailed questions, but I'd like to thank you all very much for your service to our great state of Minnesota and giving me the opportunity to testify this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we go to questions, maybe the administrator could just state his name for the record.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dan Tolsma. I am city administrator for Watertown. I've been there all of 6 weeks as of right now, so.
Okay, thank you for that. I just wanted you to identify yourself so you can put in for mileage that you were here. So that's good. And Mayor, how are the Royals doing this year, the girls and boys basketball teams?
They're doing well. They're doing well. You know, our wrestling team, too, is always top of the card, too. So, yeah, I know our sports and our sports facilities in Watertown are great, for sure. We have
pretty good. Watertown's a very nice town. Is the Chinese restaurant still down on Main Street?
It is, for sure, yep.
When you're going west?
Yep.
Okay. I'll stop in again. It's very nice. Okay, so that questions, and again, the sales tax exemption, the mayor, I think, described it very well. Any questions for members? Anyone else in the audience would like to testify on behalf? Concerns? What's the department's position?
Yeah, for sure.
No position. We got to lock you down on something here. It's at some point. That's my goal in life, just so you know. Okay, so with that, we will not move the bill, Representative Harder, right now, but as soon as we get a House file number, we'll be back on the agenda, and we'll go from there. So thank you very much, Your Honor, and 6 weeks.
Thank
tenure.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you again.
Thank you very much for testifying. So some of you did respond when I said I want some DFL bills to hear. I appreciate that. Get some more of them to us because it looks like I'm very partisan here, and that's the last thing on my agenda. So with that being said, let's go to okay. We are going to go to House File 174, the Davids Bill. I will move the bill. This is with the appurtenances. This one has a long history. It really does. So who do we have? Anybody? Jenny Glumack. Okay, so I'll just do the bill from here. House File 174 is the world-famous appurtenances bill. This is one where the department at some point, some years ago, decided they were going to tax these. after like, what, 80 years, 78 years or whatever it is of not taxing them. So we have been working with the department on this, and they've been very wonderful to work with. Representative Marquardt, and this was carried, I think, was Representative Brand last year?
Yep.
So before that was Liz Lagarde. I mean, Liz Lagarde, you got the heavy hitters here, and here we sit today with the bill before. So there you go. So I have Jenny Glumack. Is there anyone else wish to testify on behalf of the bill with concerns on the bill? And when you're done, then we'll go member questions and see if the department wishes to weigh in on this one. Okay, so I will move House File 174 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Ms. Glumack, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jenny Glumack, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Rural Electric Association. MREA represents the 50 not-for-profit cooperatives who provide power to 1.7 million member owners throughout the state of Minnesota. Electric cooperatives' mission is to bring affordable electricity to their member owners. And thank you for indulging us again on attachments and appurtenances. The bill in front of you today seeks to clarify the property tax exemption for rural electric cooperatives that has been in law since 1939 and needs updating to address the tax treatment of new technology. The exemption was put in place to support the electrification of rural homes and businesses over 80 years ago. The exemption applies to lights, meters, and low control receivers, which didn't exist back in 1939. At the time the exemption was enacted, nearly 90% of farms lacked electric power because of the prohibitive cost of delivering electricity to rural areas. We would like to get this across the finish line this year if we can, and would appreciate your support. We would like to thank Commissioner Marquardt and Joanne on the Department of Revenue staff for working with us on the language, and again, appreciate your support.
Thank you, Jenny. Any, Ms. Glumack. Any questions for Ms. Glumack? Okay, thank you very much. This one, I'm hoping we, I think this is very bipartisan. I do have to make a disclaimer so I don't have any conflict of interest. I'm a member of My Energy Cooperative out of Rushford, Minnesota. But since this applies to all co-ops, we're good to go. So any member questions for Jenny? Okay. So would the department like to, does the department have a position on this?
They have a position on this.
This is pretty cool. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director at the Department of Revenue. And Mr. Chair, we do have a position on this bill. The administration supports this bill. It's included in the governor's budget recommendations that you'll be hearing, I think, next week. And so we appreciate Jenny and others that we worked with to get this language ready to go. This law has not been updated since 1939. The technology's changed, and so it's time for that update, and we appreciate everybody working on this.
You made my day. Thank you, Ms. Bears. Really appreciate it. Any questions, Ms. Bears? Please ask none. I just want to savor the moment for a while. I just really do. So with that being said, I will renew my motion that House File 174 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Moving right along, we're going to get her done today, I think. That clock? That's not right, is it?
No, it's not.
You're moving with haste, Mr. Chair.
Well, it's 11:34 somewhere. Oh, left. You're telling me to go to the left?
Yeah.
My delegates tell me to go to the right.
Here.
I'm so confused. Okay, with that being said, Representative Rapinski, if you could please join us at the table here. And Representative Rapinski has House File 100. And I know it's no members. Let's do that way. Who's the staff on this? I will move House File 100. I believe there's a technical amendment that we need to put on. If we could just that have house research. Maybe describe what that is. Mr. Williams.
Chair Davids and members, the technical amendment just reinserts the definition of Social Security benefits. I think it was inadvertently struck in the introduced, so it's just reintroducing the same language that's already in the bill, defining what Social Security benefits are.
We have like an amendment number? Or?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's the A1 amendment. I don't know if there are copies.
Why don't you do it orally here?
Chair Davids and members, so the oral amendment would be page 2, line 21, before the, insert, open parentheses A, close parentheses, and page 2, after line 21, insert, open parentheses B, close parentheses, for the purposes of this section, comma, quotation, Social Security benefits, quotation, has the meaning given in section 86, open parentheses D, close parentheses, open parentheses 1, close parentheses, of the Internal Revenue Code, period.
Okay, you were talking fast, I could write. So let's do it this way. Let's slow down a little bit, tell us what the amendment is, and then we'll see if there's any questions.
Chair Davids and members, so the amendment that the amendment I described, or the A1 amendment, if it is in members' packets, it just adds a definition of the phrase Social Security benefits, so it's defining what is being included in the subtraction under the bill. If you look at the bill language itself, that definition appears already in current law, so it appears on lines 2.15 to 2.16 of the bill. So the amendment would just be reinserting that same definition to make sure it's clear what is covered by the subtraction.
Okay, I will move that amendment. Any questions of myself or Mr. Williams, or the author? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Chair Gomez. You're doing what I heard. You're doing what I heard.
I know.
Okay. Okay, so we have the bill as amended. Welcome to the committee, Representative Rapinski. Please describe your bill. It's already been moved, so it is before us. And it'd be my intention this one goes to Ways and Means.
Yes.
Let's go to Ways and Means. Yeah, why don't we have nonpartisan just kind of go through the bill, tell us what it does. And again, members from both sides of the aisle, I get people talking to me, members. We're talking about ideas, different things that we could do. We're not talking about money right now because this is like a super expensive one. So we're talking about the concept, the idea, get out of Ways and Means, and then we'll figure it out from there, if that's the wish of the committee. Mr. Williams, please.
Chair Davids and members, so the bill, under current law, Minnesota allows a subtraction for federally taxable Social Security benefits. The way the subtraction is structured is it's income tested. So if your income is below certain phase out thresholds, all of your federally taxable benefits are a subtraction, which is kind of the word we use in Minnesota for deductions on your state income taxes. If your income is above 100, and the numbers I'm going to cite are for tax year 2025. So if your income is above $108,320 for married joint filers or $84,490 for single and head of household filers, then you'll start adding back a portion of the federally taxable benefits. So it goes up in 10% increments of your income. So what the bill would do is eliminate that add back for anyone above those income thresholds. So it would provide a subtraction for all federally taxable benefits for people whose incomes are above the phase outs.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. And as the resident tax historian here, I would really like to thank Chair Gomez and former Vice Chair Liz Lagarde and others in the past, Chair Marquardt in the past, when he was chairman of the tax committee, in that I have never believed that Social Security benefits should be taxed. Most people get them are middle to lower income folks. There's some very rich folks get Social Security benefits too. But in the past, or what I did as tax chair back in the day, is I would be given by Ways and Means a number, a target, saying, you know, we can do this much for Social Security. So then what I would do is I'd go in, figure out what the income level was that we could exclude Social Security benefits from. So start out very low. And Chair Gomez, how much did it go up last year?
100K, but it's 108,000 now with the inflator that we added.
Okay.
See, filing jointly.
I don't like inflators, but I do on this one. This is a good inflator, not a bad inflator. Okay. So that being said, and that has helped a lot of people. That's helped a lot of people. Well, I should have Representative Rapinski present his bill after we've had the summary here from House Research. So if you could just kind of tell us what your bill does, and then we'll open up for discussion. And I do believe that we have folks to testify on this. We'll take that testimony, and then we'll go to member questions. So just kind of rehash what your bill does, Representative Rapinski.
Thank you, Chair Davids, and my fellow representatives for giving me the opportunity to speak. The bill allows an individual income tax subtraction for the full amount of federally taxable Social Security benefits. You know, Minnesota remains as an outlier. It's literally one of eight states that tax residents' Social Security income. A full repeal would help seniors stay in their home. The Social Security tax is really a double tax on income. I say let's make it easier for those people to help make their ends meet on a day-to-day basis and really stay in our area and celebrate with their family and their grandkids. A lot of us campaigned on this, and let's make this possible for them. We want to deliver on that promise for them. Thank you for your support today.
Thank you, Rep. Rapinski. We'll now go into public testimony. The first one on our list here is Arlene Datu.
Datu.
Thank you very much. Please come to the table here and state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair, Representative Rapinski, and members of the Tax Committee. My name is Arlene Datu. I am a leader in Isaiah and part of the Seniors for the Future, here to testify against House File 100. Seniors for the Future is a group of seniors across Minnesota who oppose the Social Security tax cut in 2023 and who, of course, oppose this proposal to cut taxes on Social Security income for the wealthiest 20% of seniors. All this tax cut does is put more money into the wealthiest Social Security recipients' pockets at the expense of resources for programs all Minnesotans, including seniors, depend on. And really, they don't need it. But Minnesota does need these resources. This proposed tax cut requires an ongoing cost of more than $1 billion per biennium when we are already looking at a projected $5 billion budget deficit in the coming years. This proposed tax cut is supposedly on behalf of seniors, but it's not what the seniors I know are looking for from our elected officials. We want you to steward our collective resources to ensure that our children and grandchildren can thrive in Minnesota. As a mother and grandmother, I want money in our budget spent to fund our public school system so my grandsons are guaranteed a quality education. I want money put into funding a quality childcare system so my grandsons can be cared for in an affordable, safe place while their parents are working. I want money for better and enhanced health care for all of us. HF 100's proposed full exemption of Social Security benefits is a sham and a waste of money that can be better spent to improve the lives of all Minnesotans. Thank you.
I'll put you down as undecided. Okay. Thank you for that testimony. Great job. Thank you. Let's go to Eric Bernstein, Coalition Director, We Make Minnesota. Welcome to the committee, sir. If you could state your name for the record and provide us your testimony, please.
Thank you, Chair Davids. You caught me off guard because I thought as a, you know, lobbyist hack, I so close to here, I'd be last on the list. Chair Davids, members of the committee.
Well,
for
we
the
probably should go to Kathleen then. No. Provide your testimony. We got two more. We're good. After you. We're good.
Chair Davids, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric Bernstein. I'm the director of We Make Minnesota. We're a coalition of labor and grassroots organizations united in support of public investment for a more just and equitable state. Thank you for this opportunity to share our perspective on HF 100, which would eliminate all state taxation of Social Security benefits. Chair Davids, I appreciated your comment about sort of talking about the concept of this as opposed to the dollars and cents, so I'm going to try and keep it there. We do have concerns about the cost and the distribution of this policy, but we find this like specific exemption more problematic than, say, even a rate cut. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Fully exempting Social Security income carries all the budgetary and the distributional problems of any income tax cut, but without a lot of the potential benefits. In the case of reducing the top rate, there's at least the argument that we might incentivize, you know, higher earnings or private business investment. But with this policy, we don't even have that potential upside. We're really just shrinking the base, which I think both sides generally agree is, you know, a bad policy. And the income that we get from Social Security is determined by federal policy. So we're not going to see more Social Security income coming in by lowering the rate on it or cutting taxes entirely. And by narrowing the base, we make our income tax revenues more volatile, and we push the state towards higher burdens on working families and adults in their formative years, potentially onto property taxes. So it doesn't seem like, you know, there's a lot of specific things about it that make it more difficult. On the distribution side, I don't want to belabor that point, but I would encourage everyone to look at the DOR's latest tax incidence report. Starting on page 67, they have tax burdens by household type. And so you can look at married senior households, and you will see that the top 10% of married senior households earn an average of $650,000 per year. They pay an effective combined state and local tax rate of 11.4%, which is a lot lower by at least a percentage point than most senior deciles. So I know, Chair Davids, you started off by saying there's, you know, some households that receive this income that are high income, but actually there's tens and tens of thousands, almost hundreds of thousands, that are making significant amounts of money and paying lower rates than other senior households. So cutting this income potentially shifts the property tax burden onto those lower income senior households, which is where most of those lower households are paying most of their property tax liabilities, or sorry, their tax liabilities. So it hurts seniors, too, in a lot of potential ways. And I'll just close by saying when we talked about this policy in 2023, we saw something that I think was pretty rare and beautiful. There was a concurring public opinion essays from myself, the Progressive Minnesota Budget Project, the Business-Focused Center for Fiscal Excellence, and the far-right Center for the American Experiment, all published op-eds saying that they disagreed with this policy. So if you don't want to listen to me, maybe some of those folks would be more convincing. Thank you very much.
Mr. Bernstein, I always listen to you. Mr. Bernstein, you mentioned towards the end of your comments something about property taxes.
Yes, sir.
What does this have to do with property taxes?
Chair David, so, you know, obviously the state and local governments are a very big system and very complex interworkings between what we fund at the state level and what we fund at the local level. So when the state has fewer resources, there's often more, you know, need for local governments to push up their property taxes to fund whether it's schools or other local services. So when we, you know, lower the resources available at the state for investments, you increase the likelihood of more property tax increases at the local level, which is where seniors spend a lot of their – or where they incur a lot of their tax liabilities.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation.
Not a one-for-one, but
– No. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm just wondering here, you know, you past chairs have done a good job, I think, working with what they had to raise that level. It's $108,000 because of a good inflator. So you could have a school teacher and a firefighter – that would have to add back in Social Security into their income taxes.
Chair David.
Mr. Bernstein, thoughts?
Sure. I mean, we our coalition doesn't believe that the specific occupation should determine your tax liability or the appropriateness of being taxed. In this case, we think a broad base and combined with an already progressive structure of the income tax makes it appropriate for folks to pay income on what they receive. And so whether it's a teacher and a firefighter or an investment banker or a scrap metal business owner, you know, I think we have a fair income tax, and it's appropriate for Social Security benefits to be included in that base.
When I go door knocking for the next election, I'm going to bring you with and ask my constituents when I'm knocking at the door what they think. Because this is like the number one issue that I heard door knocking this year, or 24,
yeah.
Last year.
Chair Davids, if I may, something on that?
Mr. Bernstein.
I do understand that this is an issue that really captures public energy. And I appreciate that all of you as elected officials go out and you speak to your communities, and this is something you hear. I understand we all have different views on taxes in general and funding public services, but I do think this is a difficult policy, and that's why such a wide range of analysts agree that this is not the right decision, even though it plays a certain way with the public. And I'm sympathetic to the challenges of explaining this idea as someone who's knocked a fair amount of doors and talked about this issue. Representative Norris and I have together had some discussions and doors in Blaine about this policy. And I think that sometimes there's misconceptions. People hear Social Security and they think that it's a benefit primarily for low-income people, and they don't understand how universal it is and how many higher-income folks are paying into it. It's also, there's some confusion about whether it's double taxation or not, and so folks feel it's as if I've already put this money aside for myself and now it's being taxed, but that's not how Social Security works. Most people only pay in 5% of the lifetime benefits that they receive in Social Security. So 95% of what most people, the average person, is receiving is actually income from a public redistributional program. And so applying a progressive tax to it is not really a form of double taxation. It's just taxing income that's coming to people. It just happens to come from the government in this case.
It does beg the question, you'll campaign in Blaine, but you've never been to Preston.
I'm going to get up there next cycle.
Down
I'll be
there.
Up there with you. I'm an excellent.
See, for me, Rochester, Minnesota is up north. Well, that's up north.
I do think of myself as a pretty competent door knocker. I'd be happy to get out there with you.
And Mr. Bernstein, maybe not to Mr. Bernstein, just a general comment. It begs the question to me, why? What have 42 other states seen that we haven't?
I think it's what we've seen that they haven't, and it's the value of public investment.
He's good. Any questions for Mr. Bernstein? Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Let's go to Nan Madden, Budget Project Director, Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. And then is Kathleen Cotter here? Then you'll be next.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I'm testifying today in opposition to replacing our state's current approach to Social Security tax exemption with an unlimited exemption. I did want to start by saying we all share the concerns about challenges that some Minnesota seniors are facing, and those challenges have grown in the past number of years. But an unlimited Social Security exemption is not a good solution to that problem. Targeted policies specifically focused on the challenges that seniors and other Minnesotans face would be a more effective approach. As you've heard, federal and state tax laws already provide broad income tax exemptions for Social Security benefits. The 2023 tax bill greatly expanded our state's exemptions. The limits, as you heard, in 2025 are married couples with incomes up to $108,000 and single filers with AGI up to $85,000 pay no state income tax on their Social Security income, and folks above those income levels receive a smaller amount of exemption. As a result of the 2023 expansion, it's estimated that today nearly 80% of all Minnesota families that receive Social Security income do not pay state income taxes on those benefits. The amount of tax reductions that Minnesotans currently receive from our existing Social Security exemptions is large and it's growing. According to the Department of Revenue's tax expenditure budget, in fiscal year 2024, our current tax exemptions for Social Security income were $716 million, and by fiscal year 2027, that figure is expected to grow to $875 million. So that's the value of the tax exemptions for Social Security that are already in place. If this bill were enacted, higher income seniors would receive tax cuts simply because Social Security benefits are one of their sources of income. And the cost to do so is high. This proposal would cost over $800 million in the 26-27 biennium and nearly $900 million in 28-29. I think there would be additional costs from further proposed legislation to exempt other sources of retirement income. This expensive tax cut would come at a time that we are facing a projected state budget shortfall in 2028-29, and as federal policymakers are considering drastic cuts in funding for states, for health care, and other crucial services. This bill would make it substantially more difficult to protect public services that Minnesota seniors count on, such as community-based care to stay in their homes, transit to get to shopping or to the doctor, or high-quality nursing home care. And I think the most struggling seniors would feel the greatest harm from the cutbacks in services that would be needed eventually to pay for these tax cuts. Instead, by maintaining Minnesota's existing approach to Social Security exemption, you can better protect the public services that Minnesota seniors, as well as their children, grandchildren, and neighbors count on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Madden. Questions for Ms. Madden? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Kathleen Cotter, St. Paul resident. Ms. Cotter, welcome to the Tax Committee. We're glad you're here. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Chair Davids and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kathleen Cotter. I'm here on behalf of myself, a humble retired civil servant. I've lived in St. Paul for almost 20 years, and I raised two daughters here, both of whom have graduated from Minnesota Public Schools. I'm currently the proud Nana of three grandchildren attending Hassan Elementary School in Otsego. Thank you for the opportunity to express my concerns about House File 100, which would take money away from them and not benefit me one penny. I was alarmed to hear that the legislature was considering another proposal to cut income taxes for wealthy seniors, especially after having already eliminated those taxes on low and middle income senior households. Unless I'm mistaken, this means that only the highest income seniors would benefit from this policy. With the struggles that families are experiencing right now, I'm surprised that any legislator would want to bring this idea forward. And at a cost of nearly $1 billion in the next cycle, this policy threatens the services that families and seniors depend on. I spent my career working for the Department of Human Services, fighting to ensure that non-custodial parents paid the child support that they owed. If I did my job well, there was a kid out there somewhere who had a bike or a new pair of shoes or an educational opportunity that they wouldn't have had otherwise. I'm proud of that work, but my former job is just one of the countless essential professions that the state funds with tax dollars. As a senior, I don't think that seniors should be any exception, especially not the wealthiest among us. As a grandparent, I enjoy taking my grandchildren to the Minnesota Zoo and to the Children's Museum. Wealthy seniors can afford to do these things with their grandchildren whenever they want. They do not need yet another tax break at the expense of my grandchildren's future. I urge you to vote against House File 100.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for Ms. Cotter? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming in today. Okay, so with that, we will go to, is there anyone else in the audience like to testify or with concerns? Okay, thank you very much. So we'll now open up for member questions, and I would like to vote on this yet today so we can get this one off our docket here. Questions for members. Representative Joachim, or Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I actually have a question on that revenue note. We have a lot of new members here that might not understand how to read revenue notes, and I forgot to ask about that yesterday. Could we have nonpartisan staff go through the revenue note?
Oh, absolutely. Ms. Templin?
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, you should have in your packets a revenue analysis from the Minnesota Department of Revenue for House File 100. And the revenue analysis shows the estimated general fund fiscal impact for the fiscal years in the budget forecast windows. For fiscal 26, the House File 100 has an estimated revenue reduction of $390.7 million. And $415.7 million in fiscal 27. For fiscal 28, the estimated revenue reduction is $437.3 million. And for fiscal 29, the estimated revenue reduction is $456 million. These estimates are based on the November forecast.
Okay, thank you, Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I just want to, I'll wait for later for comments. So is that okay?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. We'll come back to you. Representative Smith from the guy up north.
Yes. thank you, my southern neighbor. So You said earlier, Chair, not to talk about money, but I think we need to talk about the money in this particular bill, and we do talk about it in taxes quite a bit, because this is almost, as we see in this revenue estimate, a $1 billion hole going forward, and it's only going to grow as more and more people age in Social Security. So I think this is a monumental thing to talk about in the Tax Committee. So we do need to take some time to talk about the money, but also the reasons for this bill. And Representative, your presentation of this, I clocked it, was about 1 minute and 6 seconds. And you gave three reasons that I put down quickly of why, that we are an outlier for other states. You briefly mentioned a double tax on income and that this helps seniors. So I want to go through each of those and kind of expand. So I want to understand why you're bringing this. So the first question is an outlier. As you mentioned, we are one of the few states that have done this. Now, early on, my parents taught me that if other kids jump off a bridge, don't do it. And I do think this is jumping off of a fiscal bridge. But why is that on its own a reason for us as a state to go forward with this policy?
Thank you for your question, Representative. I do believe other states have got it right, and other states have followed suit in that. And you'll see more states, I think, in the future moving that way. And I think Minnesota's behind on that. And as people talked about door knocking, I've been out knocking on doors, thousands and thousands of doors. And I would ask you folks, your moms, dads, grandmas, and grandpas, ask them how they think it would affect them. It's really easy for us to throw numbers and stuff out there. You look at this year, according to the Minnesota Department of Revenue, 211,700 people will be affected on an average of $1,845 a person. When people start using terminology like the wealthy this, the wealthy that, this doesn't affect the wealthy. It does affect the wealthy. However, it affects all Social Security benefits for those seniors. Those people need that. Everybody in this room probably knows somebody that's affected by it, and they can talk really knowledgeably about to those people and ask them. Ask them point blank, will this affect your bottom line? This could be the difference between buying medication and buying food for themselves. I come from rural Minnesota, District 26A, small city surrounded by a lot of rural communities, and that's the number one thing I heard at the door for the thousands of doors I knocked is they wanted Social Security benefits to be not taxed and how much that would mean to them. So when we look at numbers such as 390 million in 25, 415 in 27, 437 in 28, when you use the term a billion after a number of years, yes. But we look at all the money that's been wasted in the state of Minnesota that we can use those funds to help fund other things like roads and bridges and stuff that's been brought up. I think there's a way to use those funds more accurately, and we can get rid of tax on Social Security.
Representative Smith, you still have the floor, but when I say when a bill comes forward, I'm not looking at the money so much. Yeah, this is a lot of money. We do need to look at the money, but I don't want to look at it in aggregate because we could have maybe 2 weeks of hearings and we'll spend the state budget, and we can't hear any other bills. I want to hear bills. Yes, the money is very important, obviously. But I don't want that to be a factor in us being able to hear members' bills because we're probably already over what we'll be able to spend. Who knows? Okay, Representative Smith. Yeah,
I understand that point, but I also just wanted to point out the magnitude of this bill that we are hearing. So I appreciate that. When we talk about going on the doors, obviously all of us have conversations at the doors about a wide variety of things, but also, especially in the Tax Committee, we have to look at the facts of the things that are before us. So I just want to go through some of these facts. According to the state demographer, there are 1,054,858 seniors who are people, individuals who are receiving Social Security. 71% of individuals, that's 748,949 of them, do not pay taxes on Social Security right now as things stand, no matter what we do with House File 100. So that means that 21% pay some. So that's 29% pay some. Did my math there a little all over the place. So a full Social Security subtraction only benefits the top 21% of households. So that's what you're bringing to us here. And I'm not going to question anyone that you're talking about, but the data tells us that the things that were passed in 2017, 2019, 2023 now mean that households that make $108,000 almost certainly do not pay out of their Social Security benefits. So when I say that this only benefits the most well-off of households receiving Social Security income, I'm not saying that from doors. I'm saying that from numbers that we get from our departments here at the state. I want to go on this second point that you have here, this double tax on income. So we started taxing Social Security, if my memory and research is correct, in the Social Security Act changes in 1983, which was signed into law in 1984 by President Ronald Reagan. So let the record show that I'm defending a Reagan policy against a Republican bill. And the reason for that is because the Social Security program, when they looked in the future, was not going to be sound without some very important changes to the program. There's a lot of them that happened in that 83-84 bill. One of them was the taxing of the Social Security income. The other was the 15% federal allowance for Social Security income to make sure that the double tax problem that you were talking about isn't happening to folks. So even with that change, again, under a Republican administration, explain to me a little bit more why you think this is a double tax currently as it stands.
Representative Rapinski.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to refer that to nonpartisan to make that determination exactly.
Mr. Williams.
Chair Davids and members, this is a tough question to answer because sort of there's not a lot of more recent data about this. So, you know, in 1993, that was when the amount of Social Security income federally subject to tax was raised to a maximum of 85%. So 15% are excluded. At the time, the motivation behind that policy change was to sort of avoid double taxation based on an actuarial analysis. So they sort of looked through Social Security recipients, tried to identify the highest ratio of taxes paid to benefits received. So in 1993, when they conducted that actuarial analysis, that was 15%. So the idea was we'll exclude 15% for everyone, and that avoids the double taxation problem. However, there's no sort of more recent actuarial data. The income thresholds for Social Security exemption federal law haven't been adjusted, and so there's no sort of more recent analysis of that to determine if there are people sort of on the higher end of the sort of taxes paid to benefits received spectrum that do have a portion of their benefits subject to double tax.
Thank you. Now, it's my intention to vote on this with a roll call at noon or before if you want to, but I can see where some of these are going. We're going to sit here and we've got rooms booked for night, and not tonight. I got Bible study. I'm going to go pray for us. But I was looking at the calendar next week, Monday night, Tuesday night, Bible study Wednesday night. So we could have meetings at nights if we don't get these on. I think we're going to have plenty of time for questions, and we'll vote on with a roll call like 5 minutes to noon. And then we know that it's not going anywhere anyways without another vote from my friends on this side of the aisle. So you kind of got us there in a way.
Turns out.
So we can beat this thing up all day long, kind of like we did the one yesterday, but let's be a little bit reasonable here on this. So let's continue, Representative Smith.
Yeah, okay. I'd just like to discuss ideas, as you said, Mr. Chair. Okay, my third question here is on the term fairness quite a bit here. Are you familiar with the term horizontal equity in taxes, that people who have all things being equal, the same amount of assets or receiving the same amount of income should pay the same amount of taxes? And to be honest, I think this sort of flies in the face of that very basic idea in our tax code. So maybe in the interest of speeding along some of my questioning, I just want to ask this question to you, Representative. Why would a retired person who gets their incomes from pensions, from Social Security, maybe from a retirement account, pay less in their taxes than a senior who is tight in money and works as a greeter at Walmart, who receives income and therefore that income is subject to taxation?
Representative Rapinski.
Thank you, Representative. I think it should be fair across the board. And that's why this proposes it to eliminate all Social Security tax.
That's fair.
I mean, do you, sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, you're not getting at the heart of my question is what people who are working and receiving income, no matter what age they are, whether they're in their 30s with a working family or they're 70 working at Walmart, are taxed under our income law, that income. And you are saying just because this type of income in this bill is Social Security income, that it should not be subject to any tax, even if those people have the same amount of income. Why is that? Why do you think that's justifiable?
Representative Rapinski.
Thank you. I think this really targets the individual that struggles. Not all of our people that are receiving Social Security tax are in that upper 10 or 20%. This is really going to affect that lower percentage of people that are struggling every day. I think that's what's going to make the biggest difference for them.
Representative Smith?
Yeah, I don't know I'm going to get a satisfactory answer for this question because I think the answer is this is a very unfair tax policy. But what I'm saying is if someone is, I would say, a senior who's forced, or no, maybe not forced, but is working, most likely is doing that because they are tight on income. And we still tax that income because it's income from a regular job. But someone who is maybe not forced to work because they have pensions, Social Security income, this bill is just cutting off that income from any sort of taxation. So it isn't being fair. It's being, in fact, unfair to those two different Minnesotans. And again, I want to emphasize, because you keep saying it's not all just the people who are making the most. This only affects the top 21% of households who are receiving Social Security income. So you can say that all you want, but like again, the numbers are this is only going to affect very the top end of the bracket that you are wishing to affect.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Thank you for that. Okay, let's go to Representative Joy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this is a great bill, you know, and I am excited for when census comes out again. I really am, because in my district, we're close to North Dakota, which in 2021 got rid of tax on Social Security for retirees. And when I went around the doors and door knocked this year, the 21% we keep throwing out, I think that number's going to be lower. It's kind of interesting because there was houses I went to that I knocked before that they moved over to North Dakota. They're living in Fargo. They left. So my curiosity, and this is probably for the nonpartisan fiscal, but when you look at this number, we're talking about this great big number we're going to possibly be in a casino and gamble on losing or not losing, we can either take a stance and start dealing with it now, or we can roll the dice and watch people continue to leave because the ultra-elite wealthy that we keep saying are going to leave. When Trumper gets in with his plan and gets a Social Security eliminated, we're going to be eight left taxing Social Security. So if I'm a retired, successful business person that probably started out selling lemonade in Minnesota and became wealthy, I'm punished in Minnesota. It's time for me to leave this state. I can't believe we're sitting here willing to roll the dice and gamble that the top 21%, which census will come out, will be less than that, to say that they're going to stay here because this is good. It's not. You know, we want to keep attacking this, but eventually we're going to have to face the reality. We can pick winners and losers all we want to in this state, but I think it's wrong. We owe it to people. And if those ultra-elite wealthy that we keep saying do not, they deserve to pay their fair share is a number we haven't heard yet. I know Chair Davis.
Representative Joy, could you please define fair share?
I knew you were coming there. But I just think this number we're looking at, and as we look at the fiscal revenues that come out, we see our forecasted individual income tax, and we see that it's lower this time, like $72 million from what we forecasted. I think we need to start digging that number to figure out, is it people leaving, or is it just rolling the dice, luck of the draw? So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Joy. I was just thinking that, and I don't do that often, so don't get excited. In 2017, I carried a bill that eliminated the tax. It had nothing to do with tax brackets or income brackets on military pay. And we were one of the outliers back then. Maybe there wasn't very many states that taxed military pay. We in Minnesota did not tax military pay if you have 20 years in and were discharged honorably. Okay. So the reason we did that was because on the list when military folks would be discharged, Minnesota was on the list. to come back to. Now, some did because they had grandkids and they had whatever, or children or whatever. But in that case, somebody put 20 years in, they're now 40 years old. You know what? They have another career that they're starting up. They have kids in high school. They have kids in college. I wanted these people back in Minnesota. And that was very, very effective. Now Minnesota's a state that you can consider retiring in if you're ex-military. And I know some ex-military folks have been extremely successful. I mean, extremely successful, but we never bring up the thing for the military saying, well, if you make more than this, you have to do this. So just some food for thought there. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Rapinski, for bringing this bill. I carried a similar bill last session and strongly support it. This is the number one issue I hear as well when I'm door knocking. I have a lot of senior living in my district and a lot of seniors who are desperately trying to stay in their homes, and this is their top issue. And they made it clear this is a top issue for they want us to address. And secondly, I just wanted to remind the body that this bill was also carried by a member of our Democratic colleagues, former Representative Dave Blislegard, who I've seen in committee on and off. And so this has strong bipartisan support. And I think, you know, we greatly appreciate you taking on this fight this year, and we look forward to getting it done. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. Representative Elkins? Thank you, sorry, Ms. Representative Hewitt. First, please. I'm sorry. You have the floor.
Sorry. Thank you, Chair Davis. And this is new to me. I mean, I heard about it on the floor last year, but you know, we didn't play this worthy opponent on JV. So I have to learn more things here.
Welcome to the big leagues.
It's because JV was cut. That's why I'm here. But anyway, I had to clarify that with the former Representative Garofalo last night. So anyways, to get to this, first of all, are we, and the staff may have to answer this, are federal benefits taxed right now?
What kind?
The Social Security, do they tax Social Security benefits?
Mr. Williams.
Chair Davids and members, so all taxpayers receive at least a 15% federal exemption for Social Security benefits. That's the 85% number I mentioned earlier. Lower income taxpayers, there's a very complicated federal formula that sort of exempts people that the sort of phase out starts at about $32,000 married joint, and I think it's $24,000 for single taxpayers for the federal exemption. So some federal, some taxpayers also get pay no tax on their benefits federally depending on their income.
I wish Representative Gomez would have written that in 93. She put an inflator on the 15%. I'm with you. Okay, Representative Hewitt.
And just to follow up on that, so looking at my own world, if John and Angela made $155,000 in their retirement, that's all money from their 401ks and whatever, and that was their yearly income, would I only be responsible to pay the taxes of $10,000 on? Would I get a, is there a credit there if I make that, or do I have to, do I get totally thrown out of this program?
Mr. Williams.
Chair Davids and Representative Hewitt, the phase out occurs, you sort of get fully full phase out at $36,001 above the phase out threshold. So you'd be at about $144,000 or so is when it gets fully phased out under current law. So someone with around $150,000 or $155,000 of income would pay probably tax on 85% of their Social Security benefits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That helped a lot.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Elkins.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I this year I door knocked in 21 different House districts. And you're right, this issue comes up very frequently at the doors, and I would explain to people that, you know, if you and your husband are making less than $100,000 a year, you're not paying any taxes on your Social Security income right now, and the answer would invariably be, oh, I didn't know that. So we're doing a bad job of getting the word out that the vast majority of seniors who are receiving Social Security income aren't paying any taxes on it. I am myself a senior receiving Social Security. my family's Social Security check is actually slightly larger than my legislative paycheck. And every year is an exercise. I first do my taxes, leaving out my legislative pay to see what would my tax liability, federal and state, be if I only had retirement income. And the answer every year comes out, none. So between the two, I am in that category where I receive some, state social security tax relief, but not complete. So I'm getting some benefit from the law as it is right now, but I am at an income level where I'm doing just fine. And, you know, anybody who's not getting any benefit at all, or anybody who's roughly where I am, where you're getting some benefit but not complete benefit, is doing all right as well. And I look at, you know, this $1 billion that's on the table here, and we have a choice of spending it on a tax relief for, you know, people who are retirees like me or better off than me, getting further relief, tax relief, or plugging that huge gap we're looking at for the next biennium on taking care of seniors in nursing homes. I'd much rather spend that $1 billion on taking care of seniors in nursing homes. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. I have Representative Anderson P. I've got Representative Herr and then Representative Hansen. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr.
And then Joachim. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're right here.
I have a quick question for nonpartisan. We're using this 21% of household. What? I wish I had the tables, but approximately what percent of state income taxes do the top 20% of households pay? Approximately, so.
Mr. Williams or Ms. Templin?
Chair Davids and Representative Anderson, I don't think we have that number right off the top of our head, but I think Ms. Templin's looking it up, so maybe we can get it to you in a couple moments.
Ms. Templin? Or you need a little time? Okay, a little time.
Okay. We'll wait for that number, but I would bet that it's the vast majority of state income taxes are paid by the top 20% of households in Minnesota, or it's at least, we'll get the number. So I want to just point that out. And going back to what Representative Joy talked about, people are leaving the state. They are leaving, and it's we know that. We have seen the data, and it's the top, over the top, I think it's the top 60% or more of Minnesotans in income brackets are leaving. And don't forget, this is just part of people's income when you're over the 100,000 unmarried couple. If people leave that other part of their income, we lose the tax revenue on all of it, not just on the Social Security. So this is just another reason for people to leave. The fact that we're an outlier, one of eight states, probably going to be one of six states or so, you know, in the next couple of years, that actually tax us. And we can't afford to continue to make it so that it's a logical decision for anyone that's making over $100,000 a year to leave. And that's what we're doing. And Minnesota's going to become, you know, worse and worse and worse off because of, amongst other issues, because of our tax policy. My own parents, who are retired married couple, are over this threshold. Two pensions, state employee and some mechanic at Delta Airlines. Okay, they are over this threshold. They are not wealthy. They are very middle class folks. And that's, do you have the number? Thanks. Let me get this number and then I'll.
Ms. Templin? Or Mr. Williams.
So Chair Davids and Representative Anderson, I think it's about, looking at the tax incidence study from the Department of Revenue, I think it's about 78% mm-hmm. of all income taxes are paid by the top 20% of all income tax filers. So that's not broken
excuse
out
me,
by
there's age. A band playing out there. What's the number?
Chair Davids and Representative Anderson, it's 78% is paid by the top 20% of filers, and that's all filers. That's not just seniors separately, but that's all filers.
Yeah. Well, 78% of the tax is paid by 21% of the people. That doesn't sound like a fair share. Anderson. Oh, I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah.
Representative Anderson.
And that's to the point. 78% of taxes are paid by these folks. And if we continue to lose people in these income brackets, and this is not wealthy people that are making $100,000 a year as a couple, but they happen to be in that 20% income. But if we continue to do that, we're going to have significant budget deficits down the road. It's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And I don't think we should be part of a governing body that puts Minnesota essentially into poverty. That's what I think is happening here. We are losing wealthy folks. We are losing upper middle class people. And it's very easy to go to a state like Florida and spend 6 months and a day there. It's very easy. And that's what's happening. Or North Dakota. And that's what's happening. So I just, we have to be real. And we have to look at policies like this. I wish we were looking at some of the income brackets, too. I don't know if there's bills out there. But this, at a minimum, is something that we can do to try to save some of our higher income seniors. Thank you.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Davids. And I think in the spirit of what you're asking, I'm not going to actually ask questions to sort of, you know, I really want to do speak to the philosophical part of this bill.
Absolutely.
And so what I want to just say is that when we keep talking about we're losing people, and I just want to remind us that there's many, many research to actually show that Minnesota is actually, we have net people moving in, and because we've made, and so it depends on which policy you're looking at, which study that you're referring to, that you have data that shows both ways, and that there's actually quite a bit of data that shows that we have net people moving in here. When we think about even those moving out of state who are seniors, we have younger people moving in because we have great schools, because we do invest in those. We have a great workforce. We have great businesses here. And so I think that I'm not saying we should ever lose anybody, but I think we shouldn't be selective about our data either. But I will just say that I think that it is really important, and it's true that top 20% pays 70% of the income tax. But for those of you who don't sit in commerce, we did see a commerce a report today that talked about how $11 billion in securities and investments, right? There's 51,700 accounts. And so when I looked at the population of Minnesota, I realized that less than 1% of the people own $11 billion in the investment assets in securities in this state. So I think that those who are then in that 10%, I think they're not hurting and paying the disproportionate portion of the income tax. I do know that my husband and I also are in the top 1% of income earner. We had three homes, two of them near $1 million. One is a hobby farm. And I almost never look at how much I'm paying in taxes. And one of my property taxes is $20,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure I'm not even considered a really wealthy person, but I'm telling you that taxes right now do not impact me the same as taxes for other people. What I will want to just say really quick is that if we think about, if we care about what our seniors are going through, we should care about what is happening at the federal government right now. That it is what is the attack of public workers at the federal level is impacting Social Security, even though that is not a target of DOGE right now yet. That my mom called me 2 days ago to tell me that her Social Security check usually comes by the 8th of the month. She did not get her Social Security check, and neither did my father. These are two people who were public servants, who were entrepreneurs, who worked their whole lives. My mother worked for my father, so she got paid the least. And if you know anything about Wisconsin laws where I grew up, that if you are a wage worker, you are a waitress, which she was for my father in our restaurant, you do not get paid minimum wage. You get paid about what, at the time she was getting paid, it was like $2 an hour, and her tips counted towards her hourly wages. So that means that she's paid very little into Social Security, which means her Social Security check is very low. So when she calls me and says, I need you to pay for my medication this month because my mother has a muscle disease that cost her a lot to maintain. And now she can't pay for her medication. She cannot pay for food. So when I took her to her doctor's appointment because she fell and broke her one of her vertebrae, I paid for her copay. So thankfully for her that we lived the American dream, that we have first generations to go to college because of public assistance, because we invested in that, and we chose to do that, and we didn't give people just all of the breaks that they should have because they're doing well. We were able to become engineers, and we were able to become people who are probably upper middle class, that we could pay for my mom's groceries. If you really care about Minnesotans and their ability to live, this is not the policy to do that. And so philosophically, this is just for me. The wrong way. If you care, you should go talk to my mom. I did knock thousands of doors across the state of Minnesota, and people are misinformed. They do not understand if you make under $100,000 that you are not paying taxes right now, and it actually is a failure on all of our parts. If you're at a door and agreeing with somebody that they should not be taxed and you don't know what they make, that is a failure in all of our parts. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you very much. And just a comment, I have been seeing across the various committees that we're bringing up what's happening out in Washington, D.C. I think we really need to focus on, and it can affect us some, that's true, but I asked some folks, well, how has it affected your department? So, well, it hasn't. Okay, so let's kind of do our business. We're state representatives. We're not Congress people. Just a thought. Okay, let's go to Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I also knocked tens of thousands of doors in a district where I only won by 1,800 votes, and my margins are not very high. I have a lot of seniors in my district, and I agree with what Representative Hurst said, that if you're agreeing with people to say, yeah, we should reduce this, but you're telling it to people whose income is not over that, I mean, there's got to be some honesty when you're talking to folks at the door. And so I cannot not say that, because I've said it. I had those conversations hundreds of times with my community. And when I pulled out the paperwork and looked up the statutes and showed them that it was my bill that gave them property tax deferral, it was my bill that made sure that they didn't pay income this tax. We raised that for more people. I think it is really important that we're honest at the door. And I want to just give a really clear example. So as a single mom, and I would like for you to like get your comment on this, Representative, as a single mom, I have no other co-parents. I get no child support. It is just me to raise money for my kids and to fund everything that my household needs. When I make over $108,000, let's just give it a high number there, I should pay more in taxes than seniors who have pensions, no children to pay for. Arguably, their homes are paid off. They arguably paid a lot less for their home than I did, and they probably don't have $100,000 in student loan debt. So are you saying that you support single moms making over six figures paying more in income taxes just because they're not seniors?
Representative Rapinski.
Thank you for that question. That's not really what I'm saying. And I'm not, I want to address your inferral that what I was saying at the doors may have come off as non-trustworthy or inaccurate to those people. I had a lot of conversations at doors with folks that probably made over $108,000 that still struggle, you know, depending on where you're staying, where you're living. Sometimes mean income on a household can really be different for different areas. And someone who makes $110,000 here might be just living in very low middle class, if not right above poverty level. And someone who makes it somewhere else could be well off the high hog. So that's not at all what I'm saying. I think this bill really makes it more fair and more attractable for people to move to Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hansen, how many doors did you knock on?
I think since I was elected, I've knocked over 45,000 doors with my team.
That just makes me tired.
And I think if I can just follow up.
Oh, yeah, you have the floor, Representative
Hansen. Thank you. I would like the answer, though. Is it your belief, your political belief, that single mothers like myself ought to not get a tax break like that? And that you think that seniors who do not have the cost that young families like mine have, is that the question? I'm trying to understand where this is coming from, because it is hard to hear that seniors who are saying they don't need a tax break, while single mothers like myself are sitting here saying, help, we're drowning.
Well, Representative Hansen, let's stick
to the bill
before us.
That's what I wanted to just ask the question on that.
Let's stick to the bill before us here. Your line of questioning had nothing to do with this bill.
I think, Chair, I do think it has something to do with the bill.
Let me know what you think.
I do think it has something to do with the bill, because the premise that was presented to our committee is that people making over $108,000 deserve this additional tax break that's going to cost the state $1 billion.
Okay.
As a single mother, I would love for this committee to have that same conversation about the work that we need to do to help support young families like myself, because making six figures is not doing for this our generation what it's doing for seniors. Our houses are more expensive. Our education is more expensive. Like what Chair Hurst said, I mean, these are conversations that I think this committee needs to have, because quite honestly, it sounds like just a bit of novice politics to not address these issues that our people are saying that we need to talk about. And we have so many seniors saying that they don't want this. So that's my comment on it.
And I thank you for that. What's that word that George Bush used? I misunderestimated what you said. I didn't quite understand, but thank you for explaining that. I appreciate that. Representative Swazinski.
Good.
Representative Joachim.
Then we're going to wrap it up with Chair Gomez. Representative Joachim, or Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Davids. It's been a really interesting conversation, and I appreciate you wanting to manage the clock. There could be a lot more said, and as you said, it needs 68 votes to pass the floor. I have in-laws that my father-in-law was an engineer. He made pretty good money. His wife's My mother-in-law stayed at home with six kids. They go to Arizona in the winter because they're worried about slipping and falling. But they chose to make this where they pay their taxes because they had six children. And my father-in-law is a first generation, my father-in-law is an immigrant. My husband's first generation American, first one in their family to go to college. Of that generation, my father-in-law did get a very wonderful person that helped him stay in this country and go to school. And in 5 years, he raised a family of six kids, went to school full-time, and became a engineer with a PhD while working full-time, too. So similar conversation with Representative Herr's family as well. But they chose to stay here and pay taxes because they had six children that benefited from our public education system here. And I heard very eloquently put by Ms. Cotter and Ms. Doudou, how important it is for them to see their next generation invested in. And for those of you who weren't around last year, or in 2023 when we set the budget, we got to spend $2.2 billion in the first biennium and $3.2 billion in the base. That put about a third of a dent in the 20 years of underfunding in our schools. And I'm sure you all are hearing from your schools about the investment that they need. They need that investment so that we can have educated people working in our workforce. And I know everybody keeps talking about net migration and net migration into the state and out of the state. The largest group that leaves our state right now is 18 to 26-year-olds because they go away to school. And they may start working where they went to school, and we want them back. We want them back because we have a very large aging population who isn't putting the income in to sustain our economy and our schools and our roads and our transit. So one way to attract young families back here is things like paid family and medical leave, earned sick and safe leave, making sure that businesses grow here because our transportation system helps them deliver goods, making sure that there's affordable housing here for them to come back to. Now, I appreciate the AARP's letter in the folder, but I went and looked at their website, and for the first time since I've been here, this isn't on their priority list. You know what's on their priority list? Making sure people in nursing homes have good care, making sure that there's affordable housing. And also, their top new one this year is to put a restitution account together at the state through the AG's office because a lot of them are getting scammed by phishing and other scammers out there. They take advantage of our elderly people. And I know I've knocked on not quite as many doors as Representative Hansen, and 40% of my district is Hopkins, which is 65% rental, 40% BIPOC, and 30% of our families make under $35,000 a year. But we also have a senior population that overwhelmingly supports every bond and levy we put for our schools because they know how important it is. So taking $1 billion, a biennium, out of our income for what we get for that $1 billion is the economies of scale, and that is one of the many reasons why I think this bill is not a great idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got Representative Smith, Gomez, and I don't like time constraints, but I think we're pretty good here. If anybody else has anything, I'll certainly recognize you. Representative Smith and then Gomez. I'm sorry.
We have one more.
Excuse me. Okay, Smith, and then I'm going to go Lee, Representative Weiner. Now, just because we can go to 12 doesn't mean we have to. but I don't want to be cutting anybody off. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Davids. I think it's worth pointing out where this conversation started and where it went. Because we started hearing about how this was for seniors who were deciding between paying for food or paying their rent. And then very quickly, it got to discussions of we need to save wealthy Minnesotans and give them tax breaks, and using terms like ultra-wealthy, defending the rich that they need to have more wealth and not be taxed on more of their income that they are getting. The reason they pay so much in income tax is because they have so much wealth. And that is a trend we have been seeing over decades. In 1960, for instance, the bottom 50% of families owned about 10% of our state's total wealth, while the richest 1% only had 17% only, but that's still quite a lot. By 2010, the share of wealth owned by the bottom 50% fell by roughly half, while the wealth of the richest 1% doubled. And that is increasing since 2010. It increased during the pandemic. One of the reasons that we have seniors who are struggling to buy food or struggling in nursing homes or struggling to pay their rent is because the wealth that should have been theirs during their labor years is going more and more to the richest Minnesotans and the richest in our society. And this is just another tax break out of, quite honestly, the bill author's own mouths, that this is for the ultra-wealthy to make sure to make them happy so they stay in our state rather than working for the best interests of everyone in the state. The vast majority of people who don't have hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars at their disposal to choose where and when they want to live. And these sort of policies are gutting our ability as a people and a government that represents the people to change the stagnation of wages, to change the concentration of wealth into the select few. And that is actually going to get at the problems that at least you are saying you want to solve. And so I will absolutely be voting no on House File 100 here today and in the future, because this is not the way to fix what is happening in our society economically.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Representative Lee Wiener, and then I want to give Chair Gomez some time here too. So Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I was waiting because I wanted to get to the part where we're just sharing commentary on the bill. And I'd like to explain why I'd vote no on moving this out. In my district, I have a significant amount of seniors. I go to monthly lunches with them. We've been having these anti-fraud, anti-scam trainings to make sure that they know, their rights. They have resources to reach out to. So I know there have been a lot of figures thrown out, graphs, references to policies from decades ago. But if folks are watching, and I hope they are, I think the key takeaway from here is if you get veterans benefits, if you get SSID, if you get Social Security benefits, you very likely already are not paying taxes on these funds, right? And I think what Rep. Hansen was getting at with, conversations and making sure folks understand is that when we talk about, I think the problem here is we want to help seniors, right? And I think whether you're on this side of the aisle or that side of the aisle, we want to make sure that, seniors who've lived their lives, pay taxes, are taken care of, right? Are most vulnerable, young folks and seniors. I think the question is, what is the solution? If we're going to take $1 billion of public finances to help seniors, what is the best way to do this? The seniors in my district, the only assets they have are the houses they own. And the biggest complaint that I've heard, which a lot of us have talked about, is the increase in property taxes. It's not paying taxes on Social Security income. And so I'm voting no because it's important to realize, like, we have programs like senior deferral programs for people who are fixed income, who've seen their property taxes increase. Putting $1 billion towards that program is actually a better use of this money. It's more targeted, right? And when we talk about supporting families in Minnesota, whether they're families of young children or seniors, the most important approach is having a targeted approach to actually help the people who need this. And I think that's the point that my colleagues have been trying to make. And so I'm voting no because this really doesn't help the seniors that I think folks are trying to help. Thanks.
Representative Lee, we'll go to Representative Wiener and then Gomez, and then we'll have the author wrap it up. And I did get the room extended till 1 o'clock, so if anybody else would like to say something, that's certainly fine. Representative Wiener.
This thing is kind of messed up. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill up. We had this discussion last year. Of course, the Reagan tax cuts, to hear Democrats supporting the Reagan tax is kind of interesting. But really, we were saying that this is a discussion of ideas. And I believe that is a philosophical idea, and it really is who decides what best to do with your money. You were the state. So the individuals that we're talking about have worked their whole lives to get to a certain point. And maybe they're first generation, second generation, third, whatever it is. But they've got to the point in their lives where they're going to retire or are retired. And they say, this is what we want to do with what the fruits of our labor is. And they're going to decide. And we should give them the tools to decide. Instead of saying that we as the state, as the government, can decide better for you what to do with your money than you can. So I look at this and I say, this is a great bill because it puts the power back into the individual and away from the state. When we say that every program that we can fund is on the backs of someone else, yes, that's true. Maybe what we need to start doing is looking at cutting government so that the individuals have more money in their pocket so they're not in those positions. That's where I think we need to be. And this is the philosophical difference where who decides what's best to do with your money? You or the state. I believe it's those people that have worked their whole lives to get to that point. They have worked, saved, scrimped, sacrificed so much, and then to be told, we know better. I got elected here so that I can decide for you what to do with your money. No, I don't think so. So I understand the ideas. I hear the arguments. I appreciate them. But I think it's a wrong and it's a different mindset. Our country was based on not an overpowering government, but the rights of the individual. And we have gone away from that. And I think it's time to get back. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Weiner. To wrap up now, Representative Gomez, and then we'll go to the author of the bill for some closing comments. Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks, members. This has been a good discussion today. In the 2023 tax bill, we spent $496 million over this biennium to eliminate Social Security taxes for 79% of Minnesota households that receive them. What we have in front of us is we're not supposed to talk about money, which is really convenient, Mr. Chair.
You can talk about money all you want.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
I just feel like I'm being taken out of context. I have good intents and a pure heart.
Well, luckily the matter before
the floor, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Luckily the matter before the tax committee today isn't the purity of Chair David's heart. Rather, it's whether we're going to spend $1.7 billion on a tax cut that the benefits disproportionately go to the wealthiest Minnesotans. We heard Representative Rapinski, a lot of Mr. Chair from Representative Rapinski, a lot of really just things that were not true. That this impacts all Social Security recipients. That this impacts those seniors who are making the choice between buying medication and buying food. That this targets the individuals that are struggling who are receiving Social Security benefits. That this is not just for the top 20%. But the data shows differently, which is what we kind of have presented here today. Seniors are struggling. Chair Davids was on my Preventing Homelessness Committee in the 2020 and 2021 biennium. And it's a very sad commentary, I think, on our system and our priorities that if you ask homeless advocates who are the people who are going into homelessness at the highest rate, it's seniors. Okay? No senior who's going into homelessness is making $108,000 a year. So what we're talking about here is spending $1.7 billion on a policy that will have no impact on low and middle income seniors, a policy that will not help those seniors who are struggling with food insecurity, with housing insecurity, who are in nursing homes that are underfunded. And so if we're actually serious about spending, about blowing a $1.7 billion hole in the side of our budget, when we're facing down a $5 billion deficit in the next biennium, we actually have to talk about what is the best and highest use of that money. And Representative Smith is absolutely right. What Representative Anderson highlighted was one of the greatest issues of our time, which is wealth and income inequality in this country. More and more, the wealthier are getting richer and richer, and they're owning more of a share of the wealth in our country, and lower income people are struggling more and more to get by. the costs of housing have gone up, the costs of food have gone up, the costs of childcare. We talk about all of these issues in our committee. And so the question before us is about whether we're going to spend this amount of money, $1.7 billion, to help or as a tax cut to the top 20% of senior of Social Security recipients in our state. It's a really it's a simple thing. House Research has done some sort of forward-looking projections for us. So, you know, the full Social Security subtraction will cost $806 million in 2026 and 27, $892 million in 2028-29, goes up to $1,082 million in 2032 and 2033. So, you know, as we are talking about the increase in special education costs, in the costs of delivering human services to people with disabilities and elderly people who are income limited, and that is sort of that what's driving this mismatch in our budget and what is creating a deficit in the out biennium, you know, this would do nothing to address any of those issues, any of those pressing issues. And if we actually care about being, you know, careful and thoughtful with the people's money, which is what this is, then we have to decide. Does it make sense to hand $1.7 billion over to the top 20% of income earners who receive Social Security? Or does it make sense to invest in all of the other pressing needs that we have in our state? This is going to go on to Ways and Means, and we'll discuss more about what the impact of this would be on our budget. But I would urge members to vote against House File 100. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, for those comments. To the author.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to everyone for your questions and comments and concerns. I agree, this really needs to be discussed and moved on with more groups than just yours here today. When you look at being careful and thoughtful with people's money, you look at the over $18 billion surplus that we had, and we increased taxes by billions of dollars. That is also some of the money that could have been used more effectively. So I think we can agree to disagree on a number of things, and we look at things from different perspectives, but I think this really does open up the conversation, and it does need to move forward. So I would appreciate your support today.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Rapinski. And before we vote, I want to apologize to Representative Hansen. You were giving your thoughts out there, and I was trying to follow, and I didn't quite understand what you're saying, so I should not have interrupted you. I should have waited until you were done. Then I could have asked some questions. So I apologize to you for that. Okay, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 100, as amended. Yeah, we're going to have a roll call. I requested that earlier. House File 100 as amended be passed and moved to the Ways and Means Committee. The Committee Legislative Assistant will take the roll.
David?
Yes.
Joy?
Yes.
Gomez?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Elkins?
No.
Freiberg?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Carter?
Yes.
Kerr?
No.
Hewitt?
No.
Johnson?
Yes.
Kozlowski? Lee?
No.
Norris?
Non-voting.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, first time.
She's taking the opportunity.
Jump right in there.
Roach?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Schwartz?
Yes.
Smith?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
Swedinsky?
Yes.
Warwas?
Yes.
Keener?
Yes.
Witte?
Yes.
Joaquin?
No.
Smart move.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Okay. There being 12 ayes, 10 nays, and one absent, House File 100 as amended is passed and will be sent to the Ways and Means Committee.
and I don't think this discussion is over by any means. Members, tomorrow's agenda, House File 170, David's 10-year phase out of the estate tax provided. Oh, am I going to get whooped like that? House File 146, Gilman, 161, Elkins. And again, we're getting plenty of bills on this side. I want more bills on this side. Representative Elkins, thank you for offering to let us hear your bill tomorrow. With that, good government. Is there anything else for the good of the order, Chair Gomez?
I don't think so. Thank you, Chair.
Good government all the time. We are adjourned.